Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another My Ruby Story. This week, we're talking to Elia Skito. Elia, do you want to say hello?
Hello to everyone.
Do you want to just introduce yourself real quick, remind people who you are, and then we'll tell them where to go find your Ruby Rogues episode?
Yeah, I'm Elia Skito. I'm a 36 Ruby developer. I've been developing with Ruby since 2006, and I'm mostly known for Opal, the Ruby to JavaScript compiler.
This episode is sponsored by Sentry.io. Recently, I came across a great tool for tracking and monitoring problems in my apps. Then I asked them if they wanted to sponsor the show and allow me to share my experience with you. Sentry provides a terrific interface for keeping track of what's going on with my app. It also tracks releases so I can tell if what I deployed makes things better or worse. They give full stack traces and as much information as possible about the situation when the error occurred to help you track down the errors. Plus, one thing I love, you can customize the context provided by Sentry. So, if you're looking for specific information about the request, you can provide it. It automatically scrubs passwords and secure information, and you can customize the scrubbing as well. Finally, it has a user feedback system built in that you can use to get information from your users. Oh, and I also love that they support open source to the point where they actually open sourced Sentry if you want to self-host it. Use the code DevChat at Sentry.io to get 2 months free on Sentry's small plan. That's code DevChat at Sentry.io. Yeah, that's exciting stuff.
Yeah.
I want to geek out about that, but I'm going to hold off for a minute.
Yeah.
We did talk to you on episode 430, released in September of 2019 of Ruby Rogues. So if people want to go hear more about Opal, then go check that out, and then we'll geek out on it a little later in the show.
Yeah.
you mentioned you're 36 years old. I think we chit-chatted for a minute in Italian on the last Rogues. If I remember right, you live in Milano or around Milano.
I live almost in Milano. And I work for Nebulab currently. And also worth mentioning, I have five wonderful kids.
Nice.
That's part of the story.
Yeah. I have five kids as well. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Five kids is a lot in Italy. I didn't meet too many people that had more than one or two. So
yeah. Yeah. Let's keep Ruby weird.
There we go. I love it. Nice.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'm kind of curious. Let's roll back a little bit, talk about your coding journey, and then we'll talk a little bit more about your personal life. How did you get into programming?
Oh, I was fascinated by it. In high school, and at that time, I think the thing I encountered was DHTML. Not sure.
DHTML.
DHTML.
Oh, the good old days. Yeah, that was when I was in high school too. You're a few years younger than me, but yeah. DHTML.
And at that time, I was fascinated by being able to move stuff and web pages and write in the status bar, that kind of stuff. And then I downloaded, I think, some guide from Mozilla or Netscape about JavaScript. And I didn't really understand English enough to understand anything, but I think I read almost through it and got nothing, almost nothing. and then went on and tinkered with examples and tried to move elements on the page. Didn't know what I was doing, but it was fun.
And, nice.
Yeah,
that reminds me a bit of when I was coming up through the same kind of thing. I was building web pages, and yeah, I'd copy and paste little snippets of JavaScript and then figure out how to move stuff around in the DOM. And yeah.
Yeah, really fun. Yeah, at the time I was losing a ton of time on colors on the desktop mm-hmm. and Windows.
Yep.
Yeah. After that, I went to the university, and near the last years, I had to pick like the final project, and right. that was meant to be like a CMS or something like that. And so I started researching software to do that. So uh-huh. I bumped into like the usual Joomla, and there was something called Plone back in that day. I think it was Python. I bumped into Django, and I tried a bunch of those. None of them was really working when I tried the examples. Mm-hmm. And then I found, because it was also meant to be something visual with UI and cool moving things. It was, I think, 2006. So there was the first JavaScript experiments of Google, the good mm-hmm. stuff. And then I found Scriptaculous, which was huge that day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool effects for JavaScript with smooth movements and animations.
And yeah, it was kind of a precursor to like jQuery or jQuery UI.
Yeah, yeah. And it was based on Prototype.
Yep.
And it was deeply linked with this project called the Ruby on Rails. Mm-hmm. So I saw the something like an ad down in the page for sometimes and never clicked. And then one day I clicked and saw this what's now known as a oops video.
Yep.
The oops yeah. video.
How to build a blog in Rails.
Yeah, whoops. In 15 minutes.
Whoops. Yep.
Yeah, and it was great. It blew my mind because I already done a bigish for me at the time project in PHP. It was uh-huh. like a mail client at the university with PHP and PostgreSQL. It was the database project. And so I knew the pain of connecting to the database and setting up the page and all the stuff. Yeah. And so then I saw this video and I was amazed. And then I tried it and it worked. And that was it. No, it wasn't it.
Mind blown.
Yeah, mind blown.
I love it.
Because after that, I started reading more on the Ruby on Rails page and looking for documentation and to learn more things and going past the examples and the tutorial in the video. Mm-hmm. And I found that this language had something, especially when I found the Pognak guide, the comic book.
The poignant guide to Ruby.
Poignant, yeah. Yeah. And not because of the guide by itself, but because the underlying theme that was moving Ruby. And to me, that was a beauty. That was this sense of beauty that was like a red line throughout the language and everything mm-hmm. I saw related to it. Yeah, that was great. And it's still great because Ruby is still that beautiful language, and it's concise, it's elegant, and you can write art with it. I'm not meaning that I'm writing art every day and it's like, I don't know, Picasso for programming, but it's still something you can do with, with love. I don't know how to say that.
Yep. No, it's interesting because, I mean, there's a certain aesthetic, for lack of a better word, to Rails, and it's very expressive. And so, it feels almost like you just get to put up in the editor exactly what you want, and you can be as artful or not in the way that you put your code together. And yeah, at least that's kind of how I see it. I don't know if that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, and that's this thing that when you see something beautiful, you are somehow loved by it. Mm-hmm. It's pleasurable, but it's more than pleasurable. When something is, when a room is beautiful and you enter it, it's great.
Yep.
And so you can easily translate that to a piece of code. And of course, don't get me wrong, we have seen that legacy code that's awful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ruby is beautiful until you get into that Rails app.
Yeah. But even then, you can make it beautiful. So yeah. It's still a potential.
Yep. So I'm a little curious. So you get into Rails, and it sounds like one of the things that drew you in was just that, the setup was relatively easy compared with other systems, and that you could just get in and start working on the app without worrying about all of the config.
Yeah. Yeah, the usual selling points of Rails,
right?
Like, yeah, conventional configuration, don't repeat yourself. That stuff was big because I was just experienced the pain of doing the stuff manually, mm-hmm. and having to strive toward that result by myself without getting there in the way that Rails did. So that was like an arrow to the heart.
Yeah, it's interesting the way you're talking about it because when I was in college, I had played a little bit with Lamp Stack, which mm-hmm. is PHP MySQL.
Yeah.
And I had kind of picked it up because a friend of mine had been playing with it. He'd actually been building e-commerce sites and selling sports equipment and making quite a bit of money, right? Which, you know, it made me really interested in it. And when I got my first job out of college at Mozy, and they were using Ruby on Rails, and we used it to solve one of the problems that we were facing, you know, I got in and I was like, oh, this can actually be enjoyable, right? I mean, it was fun putting together a website that looked nice and, you know, came together in the right ways, but it was a different story when, you know, when I could actually get in and do something with Rails. And yeah. You know, it was more closely expressed what I wanted it to say.
Yeah.
And yeah, I didn't have to go and fiddle with all the PHP settings to make it do what I wanted. So how long were you doing Rails before you really got into Ruby and realized that a lot of the expressiveness and things that you enjoyed about Rails were coming from Ruby?
Oh, I think I picked up a bunch of Ruby from the comic book guide. And uh-huh. then... got myself the PKX book, and then and use that a reference to get deeper into stuff. But the really starter was the Pugnet guide, so it mm-hmm. was almost from the beginning, along with the online examples for Rails and that stuff.
Right.
So after college, I went in this company. That was doing test equipment for satellites.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, that sounds fun. And that was fun actually, but I was the only one using a Mac with this weird language called Ruby in a world of Linuxes and Windowses.
Uh-huh.
And with super strict proxies to get to internet, and I wasn't able to download from Ruby Gems because there was an HTML password fence.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all kinds of, yeah, kind of stuff. And yeah, but there it was great because I was able to do a bunch of very interesting things and was able to deepen my knowledge of Ruby. I used it to simulate CPUs, not in a fast way, but in a correct way. And I also spent some time working on a cucumber-like testing framework in Visual Basic 6. That was fun.
Yeah.
And desperately try to make it look good and similar to Ruby. And then what else? Doing Windows GUI stuff with Ruby. That's fun as well with TCLTK. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's still in the standard library. I think they extracted it to a gem. And I've been there from 2007 up to 2011. And at the time, I got my first real Rails job, in a full-blown agency with Rails clients. And I was happy to do proper Rails, proper Ruby stuff. And at that time, that's when I encountered JavaScript in a more serious way. Yeah, let's say felt the pain of jumping from Ruby to JavaScript. That eventually got me to do the reverse jump from JavaScript to Ruby. Because I think after the first project that involved a bunch of JavaScript, at the time, CoffeeScript was doing great and starting to take pace. And so I thought there must be something for Ruby, from Ruby to JavaScript. And I found like 5 or 6 projects that were trying to do that.
Hey folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and I just launched my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. It's up on Amazon. We self-published it. I would love your support. If you want to go check it out, you can find it there. The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. Have a good one. Max out. I'm kind of curious. Yeah. I mean, did you create Opal or did you take over the project? I'm trying to remember the exact details here.
No, I didn't create the project. A guy much smarter than me created it. And I think he already created some translator from Objective-C to JavaScript or stuff like that. He was really into this stuff and really good at making this stuff work. But I bumped into the project. And again, it was the only one that kind of worked. And at that point, I started what I usually like to do with a new project, and I like to make myself comfortable and streamline the tooling because I was interested in using it. And so I made the connection with Rails. I made it work with Ruby 1.8, which wasn't, and that kind of stuff. So I started committing. And contributing and starting to understand things about compilers and how it was thought and studied the project. Then eventually I became the maintainer.
Yep. It's interesting to me too. It's, oh, well, I love Ruby, so I'm going to go and work on this project where I write a whole bunch of JavaScript to transpile it.
Yeah. Sounds like people writing C.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's the same deal with people who go, they love Ruby, so they go join the Ruby core team and they wind up writing C.
Yeah.
To support Ruby.
Yeah, it's similar. But in the end, it's very rewarding. And for myself, I learned so much stuff about Ruby, not just about JavaScript, because of course,
right,
you need to deepen your knowledge of JavaScript and prototypes and crazy stuff about that, but Actually, when you try to implement Ruby and the core library and the standard library, there's so many quirks that come out and or corner cases which you would never encounter otherwise.
Right.
So it's really a learning experience.
Right. I mean, what does it look like building a transpiler for Ruby into JavaScript? Is it, I mean, are you doing the same kinds of things that some of the other ones do where they essentially build an abstract syntax tree and then build it back up into JavaScript? Are you compiling down to WebAssembly? Are you looking at other things? I'm just kind of curious what this whole process looks like and what the learning curve was for you as you started to pick it up.
Oh, yeah, the process is the same. There's a small runtime written in JavaScript. I think it's some hundreds of lines of JavaScript.
Uh-huh.
So it's really tiny. And then we use we currently use a parser to parse Ruby and build the syntax tree. And then there's the compiler, which takes the syntax tree, which is like a symbol, str for string, mm-hmm. and then the actual string. And then you take the structure and you build the JavaScript string out of that. Basically, right. that's the gist of it. And for me, the really big step entering into it was reading and understanding what was going on in the runtime.
Mm.
So how the class hierarchy was mapped to the prototype hierarchy.
Right.
In a JavaScript. And for example, currently, if you include a module or prepend a module in Opal, you actually update the prototype hierarchy. So
that makes
then,
sense.
Yeah, you can leverage all the optimization that the browsers do. And you actually play the JavaScript game in the right way. So every method is mapped to a JavaScript method, and so we just do the translation. Yeah.
Nice. So anything new coming with Opal in the next little while?
The plan right now is to make it Webpack compatible natively, because mm-hmm. We have a fork that's working with Webpack, but I'm porting the great job done by one of the contributors that is the author of a new framework called Isomorpheus. That's kind of mm-hmm. It's kind of a meteor for Ruby, and so we built this fork, and it's actually working, but it requires some polishing and some generalization to get into the core, which I'm doing slowly. And this, by the way, I want to explicitly thank Nebulab, which is the company I'm working for leading the Fridays, that's called the investment time. And we actually get to do open source. And I think it's a wonderful thing for a company to live a whole day every week to do open source. It's worth praising them for doing that. And with that, that's Webpack. Then the next step is that code elimination, mm-hmm. because I think we can reverse map all the method calls from an application.
Right.
And skip compiling everything that's not in there.
Huh.
And, yeah.
So is that like tree shaking?
Yeah. Yeah, it will be the Ruby version of tree shaking. And I think that there will be a dumb version, just taking the method names without matching them to the classes that uh-huh. will already reap gains in that sense and reduce the compile. Anyway, the average app risks being smaller in Opal anyway, because you already have the core library, mm-hmm. and you don't have to require and include 1,000 NPM packages. So that's that risk using Opal.
Right.
Yeah. And after that, the other thing that's preventing some gems to be compiled right away is mutable strings, because we're mapping strings to JavaScript strings, which are not mutable. And then that goes against Ruby's default, which is mutable strings. Then I like to add a string builder for Opal JavaScript and have mutable string support, which is less efficient, less fast, but will increase compatibility. That's the plan for, I don't know.
Nice. I was going to ask too, are we going to get to a Meteor type thing that's Ruby on the front and Ruby on the back? And it sounds like there already is. So that's cool too.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me say one other thing I'd like to implement is Action View component, that the new thing that's going to be in Ray 6.1, mm-hmm. to work both on the front end and the back end. So you can build your components and use them as React components. And instead of rendering React on the back end, rendering Ruby on the front end, which is something I already experimented in the past and works great. And if it was the actual, the same actual structure used for the official Action View components, that'd be, I think that'd be a great thing and will be interesting for many Rails developers. But, you can build a million things. And there's so many hours in a day.
Yep, absolutely. So I guess the other question that I have is, what does a day look like for you? I mean, for one, most of our listeners and most of the people that we've talked to on the show are here in the US. And so I don't think people, generally people's lives look the same no matter where they live. You know, if you're in a country that has, the same level of technology and infrastructure. But yeah, there are differences and there are things that people don't think about. And so I'm curious, when you get up to when you go to bed, I mean, what does life look like for you?
Oh, a day in the life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I get up at seven, do my prayers and then bring the children to school. And I end up about nine, and then 9:30, I go to work, pick up my bicycle. I have 30 minutes of biking to the office. And then I spend my day mostly working on Solidus. We're a company that's specialized on Solidus, the Rails e-commerce. Let's give a shout out to Solidus, which is a great solution for e-commerce.
Ooh, yeah.
On Rails, well maintained, and mostly by us. And no, I'm kidding, by a bunch of companies that actually use that for really big e-commerces. And then I play ping pong and during the lunch hour. And that's it. Go back home, my bike, have the dinner with the kids, play rough and tumble with them. And if I'm able to, I do some open source in the evening. And nice. For a bunch of years, when they were when they were just born, the first month, it was a ritual to go there and stay with them in the room and work on Opal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that's linked. That's why I mentioned it, because a bunch of
motherhood driven development. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Very cool. I think that's... How old are your kids?
Oh, they're from the eldest one is almost 11. Mm-hmm. My daughter, and the younger one is 2.5.
Nice.
Yeah.
They're just a little bit younger than my kids. But yeah, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, cool stuff. It's great to have kids.
Oh, kids are amazing. Boy, they sure make you think about what you want out of life.
Yeah. 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 Life in color, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely interesting just being in that place where it's like, okay, what do I want? And then what do I want for them, right? And how do I teach them how to be the kind of people that are going to make a difference or, you know, at least be happy, right? And yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. And then being in a place where you realize that technology definitely has its challenges, but it also has its rewards. And it's okay, you know, how much of this do I want to expose them to? Do I want to predispose them to do, you know, some of the things that I'm doing? Or do I want to, you know, let them kind of chart their own path? Or, you know, maybe I'll expose them to it and they'll decide they don't want to do it. And then, you know, anyway, but that's always interesting too. So,
yeah, I think about that as a service for introducing them to life.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely getting into, I'm going to start podcasting with my kids this week.
Oh, that's great.
And so, you know, get them into that. But yeah, you know, if they decide later on in life, I don't really want to do podcasts. I mean, it doesn't hurt my feelings, but yeah. And it's really mostly about spending time with them. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Good combo.
Yeah. A few years ago at a JavaScript conference, I was approached by Nader Dabit. And you might know him for the React Native Radio podcast. He's also a developer evangelist for Amazon. And when he came to me, we had a conversation about React Native. And the thing that I love about React Native is that it's approachable, it's web technology, and it's cross-platform. And it makes a lot of things really easy for developers to jump in and do interesting things on mobile with JavaScript. So we've had this show now running for several years, React Native Radio, where we interview people about the React Native ecosystem, some of the things that are coming out in React and how they affect mobile, and other options that you have for mobile development. So if you're doing mobile development, you're doing it in JavaScript, you're looking for a good option, or maybe you're just trying to stay current with React Native, then go check out React Native Radio at reactnativeradio.com.
Yeah, I don't know if I have anything else that I really want to dive on here and talk about. Is there any other thing that you wish people knew about you that just doesn't quite come through in the open source or the podcast episodes or conference talks or anything else that you're doing?
Yeah, I think one thing worth mentioning that's really linked to not theory, but facts, let's say, is that with all the talks of Ruby is dead, Rails is dead, and everything else, I spent some years working on very demanding sites for the... I'm based in Milan, and as you probably know, Milan is all about fashion. And it's easy to find yourself working in fashion. And we had, in the companies I work, we had some really high-profile clients that I saw once a spike of 300,000 requests in a minute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They weren't served, of course.
Right.
Because they weren't expected. But we were able to serve a ridiculous amount of requests with Rails and this technology. And also we had Opal on the front end.
Right.
And it made things so much easier to maintain. Let's forget for a moment the beautiness of Ruby and all the things we talk about.
Uh-huh.
It's really a great technology. The agility it gives you to change things and keep things up to date and malleable.
Right.
Yeah. I was wondering if that's an English word. Yeah, malleable. That's a good description.
It is.
It's amazing. And you don't get that with other technologies unless you put in some real effort and you.
Yep.
I should keep appreciating that about Ruby and this ecosystem. And although the hype is gone mostly, it's not the most important thing. There's still some real value there.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could sit here and say a lot of the same things about Ruby and just go on and on. So I'm with you there.
Yeah. We will end up in some Joe Rogan like podcast of 40,000 hours.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, let's go ahead and let's roll into picks. Do you have some picks, some things you want to shout out about?
Oh, I forgot about picks this time. I was preparing the last one. Can I let you go on?
Oh, yeah. I'll do some picks first. So I've got a few picks. The last few weeks have been really interesting for me, to say the least. I'm not going to go into it on this show because we're talking about Elliot. We're not talking about me. But just a few things that have really made the difference for me. One is that a lot of people have reached out and just let me know that they support me and appreciate what we've done at devchat.tv. And I kind of just want to thank all those folks for you know, letting me know that I should hang in there and that what we do makes a difference. So yeah, I'll pick that.
That's great. Yeah, let me do first a technology pick. And I think I will pick the work done by DevChat TV as well, because the Ruby Rogues podcast accompanied me for several years, helped me learn and speak a better English and learn a bunch of things technology wise. And and also I would like to support that because I've been in a similar place before, and support is a great thing. And for the less technology picks, I'd like to pick a movie which I was almost obsessed about during the last month, and that's the Henry V by Kenneth Branagh from 1989. And this summer I read Henry V from the Shakespeare play. And then I saw the movie, and that movie is superbly acted and has a wonderful sound score, which, I really liked it. And kept watching scenes from it from YouTube. Beyond that, I'd like to pick one of my favorite books of all time, which is both something super serious and deep, and at the same time, a great collection of puns and linguistic plays. And that's Orthodoxy by Gilbert Keith Chesterton. I've read that, I think, at least five times, or listened to it. And it's a great book for anyone passionate about that kind of writing. And he is actually able to express really deep things in a way that I've never seen done by anyone else. That's it for me.
Awesome. Well, why don't you share your social media links where people can find you on like Twitter and GitHub and anywhere else that you tend to be active, and then we'll go ahead and wrap this up.
Yeah, sure. I'm Elia, E-L-I-A, almost everywhere. That's on Twitter, GitHub, and those are the main things. And then I would like to share the OpalRB.com. There was an old site, .org. It's now taken by some casino site or some spam site. So it's .com. And that's it. Let's find me and let's connect. And let's contribute to Opal.
Yeah, sounds good. If people want to contribute, do you have like good first issues and things like that flagged in the issues?
Yeah, there's a couple of first issues there. There's a really good guide on how to set up the development project. And it's really easy. It's basically being set up and break for the first run of tests.
Sounds good. All right, folks. Well, let's go ahead and wrap this one up. Thanks for coming, Elia.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, folks. We're going to wrap this one up. Meantime, Max out.
Out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN.
Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit cachefly.com to learn more.
Are you a longtime listener of the Ruby Rogues podcast? Well, I have to say, we've got something special for you. Go sign up at rubyrogues.com/premium for $9 a month. You'll get access to ad-free episodes. That's right, ads-free. No ads. You'll also get access to a call every month where we discuss the upcoming podcast topics and allow you to suggest topics or guests for us so that we can go ahead and give you the show that you want. And finally, it's a terrific way to support the show. So go to rubyrogues.com/premium and sign up.